of House Fisheries to order. Today is Thursday, February 26th. It is approximately 10 o'clock. And Representative Olson is excused. President Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Heron, Representative Johnson, myself, Chair Seaton, Representative Feige will be joining us later. He's in a closeout right now. At this time, I want to remind everybody about their cell phones and addressing through the chair. Today we will hear House Bill 49, Chinook Research and Restoration Endowment. And following that, we will do HB 110, Bob Tooks. Our intention is not to move either of these bills out today, but to take public testimony. Intention is to leave public testimony open, but to also allow for amendments to come forward on these bills. So anything to come for the committee for members before we start? Seeing nothing, I will invite Representative Heron to introduce House Bill 49.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have staff do a brief opening as well, and then I'm going to ask Karen Gillis to come up, and she can maybe flesh it out a little bit more. But in my opening statement is, you know, obviously it creates a salmon research and restoration fund in the Department of Revenue, and it's the intent, and the debate will figure this out, but revenue generated off the interest would be issued to qualifying organizations, and realistically it would be in partnership with Fish and Game. So for the record, Mr. Chairman, obviously Chinook salmon, Chinook is our state fish. It's a staple food for people all throughout Alaska. It's an economically important species for a number of commercial fisheries. It's a very prized sport fisheries research. But with all that said, the Chinook and salmon in general represents the Alaska way of life. Not Alaskan lifestyle, but it is part of our way of life. It's part of our identity. The Chinook salmon is a trend species. In other words, it's canary in the coal mine. If there's things affecting Chinook, usually it's the species that tells us that there are issues within its life environment, and the other salmon species may follow unless we do something about it. So, as you know, 8 of the 12 salmon stocks currently listed stocks of concern are Chinook. So, Mr. Chairman, this is an important issue for us to debate, and I would ask that staff give openings and then Karen to follow. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the sponsor before we have a staff presentation? Thank you. You come forward and identify yourself for the record and proceed with the introduction of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earls, Staff Representative Heron. I just have a short PowerPoint for the members. And my apologies, in your packets, the PowerPoint probably does not have page numbers, but I added those on the screen if it helps. And I should note that I'm open to questions anytime, but we do have some from Bering Sea Fishermen's Association that could answer the tough salmon-related questions for sake of efficiency. So HB 49 establishes the Alaska Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Fund in the Department of Revenue. And the Commissioner of Revenue manages that fund sustainably. That's on page 2, line 2. Of course, there's no specific dollar amount of the endowment. That would be a separate budget item. And it's important to note that the bill does not create a dedicated fund. And it says so right on page 2, line 13. And also, it's permissive toward funding, so it doesn't mandate funding. The grant account for the bill, it's sort of like a checking account, and the fund itself is a savings account, if you will. Grant account is established in the general fund. In each year, the Commissioner of Revenue identifies as available a certain amount of money from the fund to be transferred to the grant account based on criteria I will address a little bit later. And then of course, the legislature as the appropriating body may appropriate any amount after that. On page 2130, there's the uses of the grant account. Most importantly, of course, is the grants for research and restoration projects for Chinook salmon. And the grant can also reimburse the two affected departments and funds, costs associated with the fund, and of course, matching funds for private and federal grants. And the board, Mr. Chairman, is established in DCED. This is on page 3, line 20. And their primary duty is to administer the grant program. And the board consists of 7 members. The commissioner of Fish and Game or designee is an automatic appointment. And then there's 1 public member from each of 6 regions. I will address presently the map of the regions. And the public members are appointed by the governor. So these are the 6 regions, and these are based on the boundaries of the 6 fish and game resource management regions, as set out in code, not in statute. Starting on page 3, line 27, this bill sets out those boundaries in statute. The board duties are listed here. Note that one of the board's duties is to identify an organization in Alaska to support their duties. This would sort of be a secretariat to assist the board. And the grants should be prioritized on page 6, line 24. Prioritized based on which Chinook salmon stocks in the last 10 years were either listed as stocks of concern, subject to disaster declaration, closed or restricted, or significantly declined. And Mr. Chairman, I have 2 more slides, but they relate to a possible amendment, so perhaps I should wait a minute for that.
Okay, thank you. On your last slide there about the priority, are these simply items of consideration, these 4, or are these listed first priority, second priority, third priority, and fourth priority, the bullet points? And let me let the record show that Representative Geddes has joined us.
To the chair, thank you. Well, no prioritization, just says that they should give way to all these factors. Doesn't specify equally or any order.
Okay, thank you. Are there further questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you say you're going to set the boundaries out in statute, have you worked with the department to make sure you're not going to be getting into management issues with the boundaries, or is it appropriate to put those in statute or leave it up to the, I know you kind of have to have it for the appointment of the board, but I don't want to get into management issues in statute. So I'm just curious as what their opinion is of setting these boundaries in statute would be.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, thank you. The regions track very closely with the 6 fish and game resource management regions. And I don't know of any issues with that being in statute rather than just in code. While we're on the topic, I might mention that the boundary between regions 3 and regions 5, you can see how the boundary tracks along the drainage there. The boundary of the fish and game resource management regions, region 5 would just include the entire Alaska Peninsula and not have that drainage trackage. And that was a recommendation by the last year's majority leader, because the idea was that the streams that flow into the Gulf there should be associated more closely with region 3 than region 5. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but...
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, and I guess for clarification, we're not setting the boundaries for fishing game, we're just setting the boundaries for the board appointments.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, very good question, that's exactly right. And this is just based on where the board members will be appointed from.
I misunderstood what you'd stated. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And just clarifying Representative Johnson's point, then, setting these boundaries does not change the boundaries of the management areas as set in code. It only sets these boundaries as the boundaries for the board members. Is that correct?
Exactly correct. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I just thought that's what I heard, Representative Johnson. I just wanted to make doubly sure that that was the case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there other questions? Reverend Geddes.
I do, and I apologize for coming in late, although I did study the whole packet through and through. With that being said, the first question that comes to mind, and certainly from my district in the Mat-Su, why are we stopping at Chinook, studying just Chinook?
Through the chair, Representative Geddes, thank you. I'm sorry you missed Representative Heron's intro. The Chinook salmon is a sort of the canary in the coal mine, and it's the first species that is affected by environmental changes, and that's why we think we're seeing declines there. So if we can figure out what is causing those declines, presumably we could apply that to all the species, and those species may start to exhibit future declines if we don't act.
Right. And if I
agree with you, yes.
And I guess my statement back is, and I understand where you're coming from, but the word presumably, and of course we're very passionate in the Mat-Su, and if we had fish to catch, maybe we'd be at a different point. So I wanted to make that statement that we're certainly very interested in all species. So that being said, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Whitner here. Yeah, to my colleague, as we haven't had a chance to visit on this, but talking to the co-chair of finance from Treaty Act, is that it might bear out in this deliberation that all salmon are of concern, and maybe it should be salmon. But starting out, of course, Chinook being the state fish, being the canary in the coal mines, is that's what we're starting with. But I'm very amenable to taking a broad look at the condition of our fisheries, regardless of the salmon species.
Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, and this is probably not a fair question to ask you, but I'll ask and then anyone can answer. The difference in concerns for Kodiak and Palmer are considerably different. Would you be receptive to not adhering to the last year's majority leader's recommendation?
Through the chair, absolutely. That's for the Rural Committee.
I just you know, want to put that out there. It is an issue that we deal with and are very passionate about. And if I would think that if Representative Gaddis's district had someone representing us on this from Kodiak, it might not bode very well for the South Central delegation. So I'd like to, not that Kodiak's not very capable and all of that, but I just think that if we could, we have differing techniques. So I'd like to see it go back to maybe the old way where five was part of the chain down through, just as a recommendation. And I'll talk to the sponsor independently.
Sorry, if I may answer the chair, Representative Johnson. Kodiak was always in Region 3 in the resource management regions. It was just the slim edge there of the peninsula that was in Region 5.
Right. And it still doesn't change my original statement, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
and Representative Harris.
On that point, I think it's well taken. Is that, you know, we're setting up the board boundaries, not necessarily defined by fishing games,
right,
management areas. So we'll work with the sponsor of that amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I just, as I understand it, these boundaries would be there, so you know, expanding the board if that's necessary, or what we've got this bill before, we got both of the bills before us today to take public testimony and to get amendments to make the bills better. And so I just want to make the public as well as the committee understand that amendments are, you know, to make the bills better is what we're here for. So
And they always do.
I did have a question. On page 1 of the bill, line 11, income earned on these investments of the fund, if that income is appropriated by the legislature to the fund. Oftentimes in funds, interest is retained in the fund. I'm not sure why the idea is to set this up that the interest is only retained in the fund if it's appropriated by the legislature to the fund. It seems like if the legislature is establishing the conditions of the fund and wants to make sure it's healthy, then the earnings on that fund would automatically retain in the fund. Of course, it's not a dedicated fund, and the legislature can remove that at any time. But if it seems that if we have a significant enough issue that we want to create a fund, we want to make sure that we do everything to maintain the health of that fund over time. So whether the bill sponsor or the staff want to address that or
Representative Harris. Mr. Chairman, I think that an answer to that should be come from the Section 37 lawyer that drafted it, and we will get back to you.
That's fine.
And Mr. Chairman, the amendment, the section as amended by the amendment will covers that in greater detail. We can go there now if you like. Let's talk about the section itself.
Okay. Well, we haven't finished, I don't think, yet with the bill. So let's or maybe we have. Does anybody else have any other questions on the bill itself? We have, I don't know, Representative Gaddis, if you were here, the PowerPoint had a priority listing of items. Those were not in priority. Those were all considerations, but there was not a waterfall of first, second, third, and fourth priority, just so that everybody understands. Any other questions for the sponsor or his staff? Yeah, Representative Gaddis.
And I guess, again, I apologize, maybe it was covered, but what's the difference between this group and what the governor's proposing for his salmon study, if you will, his Chinook study?
Mr. Speaker, I will avoid staff making a political statement. I'll do it. Is that the difference between this one, this proposed legislation, and the governor's is this would create a fund, of course, that would generate revenue, so there would be a steady stream for many years for research that would be, of course, being partners with organizations and fish and game to figure out what's going on. The difference, in my opinion, between and the governor's proposal is it dumps $10 million through the capital budget into fish and game. And so they get to do whatever they want to do with it. Then the following year, they dump another $10 million in. And then the third year, another $10 million. But maybe the research dollars amount may be only needed for that particular year to get a research process, a continuous research process, may only require 1.5, may only require 3.7. We don't know that yet, but that's where the governor and I part ways, because I'm not so sure that we want to just dump $10 million over the next 3 years, because we haven't figured out if it's going to be accountable the way we want it to be accountable for salmon research.
Representative Gaddis.
You know me well. So what I'm hearing you say, but I didn't hear this, so is essentially the you're not entirely sure that the governor has done his research, if you will, to determine what they're going to pay and what they're paying for. And this sidebar group has done the research, and you think that they're better prepared to move forward?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gaddis, you know, maybe we got a perfect marriage possibility here. Maybe we can do both. Maybe this is, I think, what we need to flesh out is what makes sense. Some critics would say that when the symposium happened last year that the department was looking for gap analysis, and some would say that maybe the gap was fish and game. And that's probably an unfair statement, but I'm a little concerned that we should maybe have a research revenue stream that's based over many years out of a chunk of money that's in the savings account, which the legislature can touch anytime it wants. And so let's have a steady stream of partnered research projects on all salmon. That's the difference between this proposal and the governor's capital budget request.
Well, and the final statement is, and I happen to agree with you, that we should not be managing our resources by any other way than research, scientific research and data. So I too agree with that form of management. So thank you.
And I think that from my understanding, and correct me if that understanding is wrong, Representative Herring, but the salmon with a 5 to 6 year life cycle, a 5 year research project isn't going to solve the problems that exist over time. And so I think that that is the main objective, is to have a continuous research that can answer can address those over a longer period of time. Are there other questions for the sponsor at this point? Okay, we will go to further presentation on the bill, which is
Karen Gillis.
Would you come forward? And we do have public testimony as well, which we'll get to after this presentation. Welcome, and would you identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Karen Gillis. I am the Executive Director for Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. My organization has been engrossed in salmon research and the monitoring aspects of salmon since 1994. We've been heavily engaged in developing research efforts, and my testimony today will address some of your questions, Representative Gaddis, and also kind of confirm what Representative Seaton has said and others. So,
and let me just interrupt you for a minute to recognize that Representative Feige has been able to join us. Go ahead.
Thank you. So since 1997, Alaska has declared and or accepted 23 salmon-related disaster declarations. Yes, some of Alaska's salmon fisheries are models of biological success, but at the same time, there are fisheries facing severe challenges. We cannot conserve the integrity and diversity of nature without knowing how natural systems work and how they respond to the many factors that influence them. The information revolution is not producing action, but instead confirming our inability to resolve basic issues. Recent salmon declines are leading many areas of Alaska into greater poverty. A two-pronged approach is required, and there is a distinct difference between monitoring and management, what ADF&G does, and research and restoration of Alaska's salmon stocks. Both are necessary and important components of how we understand and therefore manage salmon stocks. The approach from the department to increase the monitoring of our salmon stocks is on the table. And while that approach has relevance, it does not justly address the current declines. It will not provide answers about what influences our Chinook salmon returns or at what life stage we can support or enhance their survival. Federal disaster money and the oh-so-beloved line item appropriations that we've been used to were the sole contributors to the research and restoration efforts in the Arctic Yukon and Kuskokwim regions, or AYK, until 2010, when the state legislators began fully understanding the benefits of these efforts. Through the AYK Sustainable Salmon Initiative, the state of Alaska has appropriated $5.5 million to the research and restoration of AYK salmon stocks. That initiative is the largest collaborative research program within the Pacific Rim. That structure is being considered for replication as a model in the lower 48 Canada and other countries. We have learned that although we've been researching salmon stocks in the AYK since 2002, we are just now beginning to understand the myriad of variables that may be inhibiting restoration. An endowment will permit the continued building of knowledge about these variables, and this information then can be used to improve management decision making. We've learned that with understanding, forecasting can be improved. With improved forecasting comes better management. With improved management, extreme harvest level variations should be reduced. We understand that management cannot affect or address all variables. Our primary means by which to affect salmon regulation are by regulation of fisheries in terms of gear types, geographic limits, timing and duration of fisheries. We can establish limits on harvest, protect habitat, and inform stakeholders. To achieve this and give Alaskans answers, we need a life cycle approach. Gathering the best knowledge we can from the natural and social sciences to illuminate the human impacts, as well as fully understanding the natural world so as to work out realistic ways of achieving sustainability. A combination of improved monitoring, process-oriented studies, modeling, and policy development are necessary to improve our ability to forecast and address likely future changes in Alaska. We are not capable of truly managing until we have answers to some basic questions. What's happening to these stocks? Are there management tools that could work better than the ones we currently rely on? Is the way we calculate escapement goals the best for our stocks, or are there different approaches that could be developed? And not just different approaches and methods, but is it the right way for every stock across Alaska? Are there restoration efforts that could be easily implemented around the state to help increase the survivability of these stocks? Are there innovative forecasting tools out there that could be developed for Alaska's unique river systems? Establishing this endowment can produce answers to effectively address the causes of declines and improve direction for the state of Alaska. With consistent funds, this program becomes independent of the ebb and flow of Chinook salmon abundance in any one particular year, and hence the ebb and flow of the political pressures to react. Consistent funds mean a long-term effective program focused on the full range of research and restoration needs. In addition, projects can be as short or as long in length as necessary. Consistent funds allow projects with time lengths that are biologically relevant. Project length can match the Chinook salmon life cycle, allowing the ability for the program to undertake research projects that require consistent funding over one or more life cycles of Chinook salmon. For example, some research questions can only be answered by following a brood year from egg to returning adult. Most programs limit project lengths to time periods much less than the Chinook salmon life cycle, such as 2 to 3 years, which is what we're very familiar with, primarily because of uncertain funding in the future. This fund will allow scoping project lengths to best match their research and restoration purposes. We require multidisciplinary research across the full salmon life cycle, especially in the marine environment, where Chinook salmon spend three-fourths of their life history and complete 90% of their growth. Multidisciplinary research draws from multiple scientific disciplines to redefine problems outside of the normal boundaries and reach solutions based on a thorough understanding of our complex systems. An endowment such as this will allow high-quality, longer-term research to provide fisheries managers with better forecasts, improved responses to changing environmental conditions. No other place in the world has a resource such as this, and yet we have not armed ourselves with any kind of unique expertise. The state of Alaska is responsible for the investment essential to the sustainability of our Chinook salmon stocks. It's true, federal resources may be assigned from time to time based on additional disaster declarations, but let's stop fooling ourselves that Uncle Sam is going to hand us a lot of cash every time we get ourselves into a problem. We need to be the leaders of our own destiny and ante up to the real problems of today. This bill was introduced last year and it timed out. We did not come upon any true opposition, and quite honestly, the concerns that were raised last year have either been dealt with or withdrawn. It would have been promising to have passed this bill last year and to have been able to say that, yes, we can deal with the disasters of today. We need to put this into play before another disaster year is declared. And for the record, we've already been warned by the department that the 2013 season for the Yukon River may be even worse than 2012. The state of Alaska, by way of Alaska's constitution, mandates that all state resources be managed for sustainable harvest. Ours is the only state in the union with a constitutional mandate for sustainable resource management. But you can't have it both ways. Either back up that mandate and put fiscal resources into place to ensure that this mandate is achieved, or you risk these resources, thereby failing to provide Alaskans with their constitutional rights. The Alaska Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Endowment Fund is the approach necessary to provide stability that's needed to restore and protect the future of our stocks. This endowment is not duplicative of the recent Chinook salmon stock assessment proposal by the department. It is to provide the research and restoration mechanisms necessary for today's crisis. That's my testimony for today. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you have that in written testimony, it'd be we'd appreciate that getting that so all the members can have it in written form. Questions for Ms. Gillis? I guess I had one, and I did go to the AYK Sustainable Salmon Initiative conference at this, I think it was in December. Was very impressed that the research was actually directed. You know, there were, I believe it was seven different theories had been proposed, and then RFPs went out to identify and to figure out whether each one of those theories, whether it was in-river disease, whether it was bycatch, all of those different parameters, research requests went out. And, of course, in December was the reporting back on that research that had been funded. And it was very encouraging to see actual, you know, answers as to whether a particular theory that had been advanced and the scientific research was saying, yes, this was significant probability of having that be a significant determiner of king salmon reduction, or discarding that as being one of the significant things. And so, you know, I'm very encouraged with the approach that actually finds answers instead of just putting designing to get information but not test what science does. And that's, you put forward a theory, you generate a proposal to test that theory, and then you find out whether that was or was not. And that's one of the things that I think we lack, and I think that this bill might give us a chance. But you said there was $5.5 million for the AYK Sustainable Salmon Initiative. Do you know what the where we are in that expending of that amount of money that was put forward by the legislature? Is there still another year on that? Has that reached the end and there's no more left, or what's the status?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a good question, because I think one of the things that we always need to do is identify where we are in the process. The initiative is extremely unique. We have the great benefit of our structure, which is how this is really designed, what this is designed after. To prove ourselves right or wrong and draw from the multidisciplinary aspects of scientists around the world, really, our funding has our last appropriation was in the fiscal year 2013. We're in 14 right now, thanks. And we've led a call for proposals for 90% of that money. Actually, a week and a half from now, about $2.5 million of that money will be dedicated for projects, which will leave a small chunk of money to possibly look at some of these finer details in more with some expert panels coming up. But we don't have the ability to sit on money. There are enough questions on the table today to spend a lot more money. And I think that's where the hypotheses that were presented in December come. And the research action plan that was developed as a result of that work also has several pages worth of projects that are necessary within those hypotheses to answer. So funding-wise, we are identifying projects to spend about 90% of our final appropriation on March 8th.
Okay, thank you. And just to clarify, there's always things you can spend money on. And so I don't want to, I really want to draw a difference between finding things to spend money on and going out with directed research proposals to answer questions. And I think that that is something that is very unique. And one of the things that I noticed there was it was the stakeholders from all across the area were the ones that were testing the theories, coming forward, which is similar to this panel where you would have people representing the different areas coming forward, not to spend the money, but to get answers. And so I appreciate the testimonies. Any other questions for Ms. Gillis? And if you would, wouldn't mind getting that, we'll distribute the written copy of your testimony as well. So let's go to, we have Stephen Runyon in Willow. Are you online?
Yes, sir.
I think we heard something. Would you try again?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I am present.
Oh, great. Mr. Runyon, would you identify yourself, who you represent for the record, and go ahead with your testimony on House Bill 49.
My name is Stephen. I am representing myself on this. I am a member of the Susitna Valley Advisory Committee, but we did not have a chance to go over this bill in committee, so I am here to represent myself. I would just encourage you to very seriously consider this bill. As the representative from the Bering Sea area pointed out, there are big gaps in salmon research, especially considering Chinook salmon. Some of the needs that we on our committee and here in the valley definitely feel need to be addressed are severe drought conditions in streams. What does that do for salmon production? Also floods. We've had two very major floods here in the past 6 years, one in 06 and another in 2012. And these flood events had a big effect on the salmon, but there's been no studies to quantify that effect either on adult survival, spawning success, or juvenile productivity in stream. We believe that there is productivity problems in the marine environment, but where is that problem coming from? Is it in the juvenile's life, or is it later on in the adult stages? There's so many research gaps that make it very difficult for managers to actually manage the fisheries that take place on these fish throughout their life cycle, and also direct restoration projects if restoration can be done. The members of the department testified to us in our committee, it was our last meeting several weeks ago, that the average sports harvest here in the valley was, or in the Susitna drainage, was about 25,000 Chinook salmon. I believe this was in the 90s. It has declined to about 10,000, and after this year's management steps will likely decline to about 4,000. So that's to a sport fishery here in the valley. That's extremely important economically and socially to the valley residents, also for the tourism industry in this valley. And we're extremely concerned about where the Chinook have gone and where they will go without further research funding. Whether or not this board will be the means to accomplish that, I'm not sure, but it does sound like a very good idea. I did have a couple concerns about the way the legislation is written. One is there was nothing in the bill language to ensure that all the groups are actually represented. It ensures that one group, one member of each region is going to be on the board, but it doesn't say whether or not all six could be commercial fishermen or if there actually will be a full representation of all groups. And that was basically what I wanted to testify on, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Runyon. Are there questions? And thank you for the suggestions. I see people writing things down to look at this bill as it goes forward. Let's now go to Clam Gulch, David Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Martin. I'll be representing myself. We didn't have time to run this before the various boards I sit on. I'm not sure, just looking at it from the get-go here, there's some things I can support in it and some things I can't. I got a lot of cautions in it. The first thing I see is I'd like to see it addressed to all salmon, because we manage them as a whole, and quite a few of them have problems. I like the idea of having a fund set aside to do some studies. As far as the board and appointees, I can see some politics getting into that, as we have on other various boards. So we might try to structure it to use the avenues, maybe for projects of the existing ADF and GE. You know, we've got advisory committees, we got fishing groups. And a lot of times we see on these projects is your scientists and biologists in the departments, they know what they need for studies, but sometimes when it gets into the upper management to make the decisions, those studies are foregone for more of a political study. I've also seen a lot of studies that have just been ongoing and nothing's really come about from them. I kind of want to shy away from repeating the history on other projects. Evos was a good one. They spent a lot of money on non-fishing projects that didn't do any good. I also participated in the Chinook Forum in October. It was a statewide forum. I was kind of disturbed after 3 days. Basically, there was talk about doing near-shore marine environment studies for the next 10, 15 years. There's very little, if any, testimony or comments on the freshwater environment. And, you know, we need to look at it as a whole, and maybe this system will do it. I don't know, but we need to go toward that direction, because there is a lot of issues right now that can be addressed to help with the King Salmon problem. So you said in the drainage, you got pike, impaired waters, hook and release mortalities, a lot of things that we already know but we need to implement. So I guess what I'm saying is we don't want to create another layer of bureaucracy where we just keep doing ongoing studies and we waste monies and not have any solutions or results. But we really don't have time to do these studies. There's several things we can do immediately. So we want to try to structure that direction. So I appreciate your time. Sorry about rambling on there, but I would like to see it for all salmon so we can get the proper funding. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Hey, Dave, I had a couple of questions. Were you suggesting that there be a requirement that the appointees from the region also, you know, whether coordinating through the regional advisory committee process or through some stakeholder process, actually not just represent themselves but represent the stakeholders and users of that region more broadly? I'm not quite sure. I was hearing something about advisory committees, but I'm not sure if the regional advisory committee structure that was in place, and I'm not familiar with that, still in place, but the individual community advisory committees had a regional structure, or how do you have some kind of proposal, or if you, and this is going to everyone else that's listening on the teleconference, if other people have an idea of how to make the board more representative of other than the individual person that is appointed, so that they are actually representing that area. I don't know if the committee wants to look at that without some input from the public, but I think that that's what I'm hearing, is that, you know, the governor appoints somebody from everywhere, from Kodiak to Mat-Su, Kenai Peninsula, all in that region. That one person, do we, how does he get representation, he or she, get representation and draw together the concerns of the region, not just the specific town in which they live? And so, if anyone has some ideas on that, I would appreciate it, because I can see that that might get over our hurdle of these are large areas. You don't want too large a board with 25 members on it, but somehow you want that person from that region really representing the region, not just representing themselves. So that's a concern that I would like to ask. And Mr. Martin, you have the mic right now, so if you have any ideas on that, that would be fine, or if you want to submit some later, that's fine as well.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yeah, that is kind of a tough one to structure, to keep the politics out of the appointees and have the proper representation and that people's going to do the best for the resource. Just off, and it could go several ways, you know, and this deals with projects also, you could have a bidding process for people that have their names up for board appointees to be vetted through the advisory committees of fishing groups in the area. You know, if they can't make it past the muster of those groups, then maybe they're not representative of the people and the majority of the groups in the area. You do the same thing with the projects, but projects, I would say, should be more attended not only what the people might want, but what the scientists and biologists in the area, the regional managers, what they need for to coming up with proper management strategies. So that's just, it's kind of a tough one, but we want to do what we can to keep the politics out of the board appointees. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's now, unless anyone else has a question, let's go to Homer, Pete Whedon. Mr. Whedon, are you online?
Yeah, can you read me?
We sure can. Would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Seaton and members of the House Special Committee on Fisheries. My name is Pete Whedon, and today I'm representing the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, but I'm also a charter fishing business owner that depends on Chinook salmon for a good part of my livelihood. The Alaska Marine Conservation Council is a family of seafood harvesters from all over Alaska and is dedicated to protecting the long-term health of Alaska's oceans and sustaining the working waterfronts of our coastal communities. Besides being the official fish of the state of Alaska, Chinook salmon are important to our people nutritionally, culturally, and economically. People travel from all over the world to fish for king salmon in rivers from Ketchikan to the Yukon River. Chinook are an important part of our southeast Alaska troll fishery, the Copper River gillnet fishery, and western Alaska in-river commercial fisheries. Stable, long-term funding of Chinook salmon research is needed to fill the gaps of knowledge that exist in environmental conditions, freshwater habitats, and population trends. We need a dedicated program to understand and address the causes of the declines of Chinook salmon throughout both freshwater and marine environments. And this research program must draw on the best available science, including population biology, freshwater and marine ecology, oceanography, genetics, modeling, and statistics. It must facilitate coordinated efforts among diverse partners in Native organizations, state agencies, federal agencies, universities, and the private sector. In the words contained in the sponsor statement, this research endowment fund would, along with the Department of Fish and Game, direct research monies in priority area to priority areas and topics based on an adopted Chinook Salmon Action Plan. These funds may also be used to leverage additional funding by providing necessary matching funds. And on the subject of the makeup of the board, just off the top of my head, I would probably echo what Dave said about the ACs. I think that the members of the board should probably be vetted through the ACs, because I don't know about other ACs, but of the 82 around the state, the Homer one represents a pretty diverse cross-section of the stakeholders, and I would trust that they could come up with a suitable candidate. So in closing, the Marine Conservation Council supports HB 49 as a good step towards stable funding for Chinook salmon research. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Whedon? Seeing none, let's go to Lynn Whitmore, Nanka Point. Lynn, are you online?
Okay, Carl, can you hear me?
We can. Would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure, this is Lynn Whitmore. I represent myself. Let's see, I sat on the Homer Fish and Game Advisory Committee for 17 years, and have been doing resource management type things down here for about 30 years. And I've got just a few comments on this. I like the idea. I would ask that you find a way to assure parity among the user groups, and going through the ACs is a real good idea. They vary and they don't agree on things a lot, and that's probably a good thing. And to to take the politics out of the process of the appointments would be a real good idea. If this group, or if this board is successful, it seems to me like you should not limit yourselves just to king salmon. Maybe when you put your bylaws and your goals and objectives together, this board may want to leave themselves a little bit of room and not paint themselves into the corner. If they're real successful down the road someplace, this might be a very good opportunity to address some of our other fisheries issues, which are getting pretty loud right now. I'd also ask you that when this gets put together, that you consider allowing this board to fund or support targeted enforcement efforts, including undercover operations in the high seas environment. I think an awful lot of us suspect there's some big things going on out there with our king salmon, and sometimes if we can get out there and prove or disprove that, we can move on to other things, and if it's an issue, enforcement could deal with it. And we all know that large boards tend to struggle to make progress, and so I would say to limit this board, maybe not just to six, but keep it fairly small, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys.
Thank you, Lynn. Any questions for Mr. Whitmore? Seeing none, is there anyone else, or is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on HB 49? Is there anyone else online to testify on 49? Seeing none, we will we'll close testimony at this time, and we'll reopen it again, but I want to be able to go to committee discussion at this point. Representative Herring.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, just so people can think about it, is that considering the testimony that we received both from individuals on the committee and members of the public, is, Mr. Chairman, I'd offer that we put together an amendment that would change in the title and elsewhere, just so we can move it along, is that delete Chinook and insert wild. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, as a suggestion, go forward. and discussion of that we're in committee discussion. I guess the one thing that I would say is that, you know, if we use a rifle, we have a target. If we use a shotgun, we're going to disperse our efforts and we're going to find pieces. We're going to have some people that want to look at pink salmon. And so all of a sudden we have people across all the management regions that are going to be wanting to look at totally different questions. Because pink salmon on a two-year cycle research is going to be quite different than what we're trying to target with a, because I think that what this is trying to do is have people focus in on a statewide concern. And so I guess, you know, even the sponsors making the suggestion, I'm kind of arguing against it, because I think that the focus and rifling in on something is going to get us answers that are going to be applicable, more applicable across regions, and it's going to be difficult if we have talking about all fisheries from Norton Sound all the way to Southeast on all these different species and trying to look at limited dollars. I think in the future the legislature could always expand it out. But I think that we would be potentially throwing some gravel in the gears of moving forward. So, you know, this is just discussion. We don't have an amendment on the table, but I'd like everybody to weigh in and consider that as far as at this point in time. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I tend to agree with you. I mean, if we put $100 million in this, yeah, let's do salmon. But as long as we're going to be restricted by the money that we're going to be able to put in this, I think the targeted effect, and we might just learn something about other salmon while we're studying this as well. But I tend to agree with it, and I appreciate you trying to want to work with people. I know there's concerns all around, but we've got to start someplace, and I think that this is a good starting point. So I tend to agree with you that I kind of keep it focused on Chinook. Unless we're going to put a lot of money in, then we can fix it all.
Reverend Gaddison and Froggy.
And I guess my original statement by looking at all fish, certainly not to discount in the area that I represent that all the fish we're concerned with. We're also concerned with Chinook, though. So with that in mind, I don't have a problem looking at Chinook. Those also are very important fish in our region. So I want to be sure that my folks recognize that we're at all times paying attention to what's happening in our region. So thank you for, potentially looking at all fish, but I'm agreeable to looking at Chinook as well.
Reverend Feige.
On that topic, Mr. Chairman, the dilution of effort that would come with looking at all stocks could be problematic. I think, I guess on first blush, I think that you are going to have some cross-pollination of research that's done on just Chinooks. You're going to find that it's going to apply to other stocks as well. Looking at the makeup of the board, I think we do have to be careful on the makeup of the board, because the credibility of those people and how they are perceived by folks receiving their eventual work products will be critical to the success of the research program. When I first looked at the map and how everything was spread out, a geographical distribution is certainly fine. To have some kind of a nomination process where the local, those geographic areas get to weigh in and then perhaps get together to provide a series of nominees, much like judges are nominated and then selected by the governor, is something perhaps to look at. The other thing is you've got not only the geographical divisions, but you do have to recognize that we have sport fishing, commercial fishing, and subsistence interests among, just to put them in three general categories. I don't think those seats necessarily need to be geographically assigned, but if you were to say, you know, at least one person must have a con fish background or one person must have a sport fish background on the board, I think you're probably going to get more, but you don't want it to get heavily weighed one way or another. So.
Thank you. Representative Herring.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. Pardon the pun, but I offered up that conceptual amendment as bait. And I really, I mean, I did, because is that I have to go back to the testimony that I gave, is that really Chinook is the canary in the coal mine. And yes, I think that what research has already been done is that, to use Representative Feige's thing, is the cross-pollinization of research will find, because the salmon live in the same waters, but really it Chinook is the guy that's saying, hey, we got a problem, figure it out.
Thank you. Any other discussion on that point? Seeing none, I think that we have had a number of different questions to the how to select people to make sure they're representative of the district. I think that's going to take more development than just more thought by more people, and hopefully the public is thinking about this and will send us suggestions as well. So unless somebody wants to talk about that in more specifics than we have right now, let's put that as one of the items for the sponsor and his staff to look at and try to aggregate something. Representative Gaddis, did you have a...
I'll withdraw my question.
We did have one amendment. Is that something that you wanted to put forward at this time, Representative Herring?
Mr. Chairman.
Just so the public is aware of what's being there, and we are in committee discussion, so if you want to make that amendment, that's...
Actually, Mr. Chairman, is there two of them, or just the one? There is two of them. Is Mr. Chairman, for the committee's consideration, is that the First Amendment is...
So this is 8.1?
8.1.
Okay, does everybody have 8.1? Okay. So if the committee would label 28LS0143/8.1 as amendment number one with Representative Herring, do you want to move that amendment?
So move, Mr. Chairman.
I'll object for discussion purposes, Mr. Chairman.
So Representative Herring, would you...
It just further clarifies, as you can see, that this revenue is available for appropriation and may approach 5% of the market value of that fund. And this, of course, obviously will need further debate and review.
I will move my objections, Mr. Chairman.
What's that, Representative?
I'll move my objections, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the objection is removed. Are there further objections to the adoption of amendment number one? That's on page, the substantive part of it is on page 7, line 15, and it adds for the first three fiscal years after the effective date and as soon as practical July 1 of each fiscal year, the commissioner revenue shall identify as available for appropriation to the Alaska Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Grant Account established under this, that the legislature may appropriate to the grant account 5% of the market value of the Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Endowment Fund. And it also provides for an effective date of July 1st, 2013. So seeing no objections, amendment number one has been adopted. Representative Herring.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt amendment A.2.
Jack for discussion.
And we have before us 8.2, label tabled as amendment number 2, and we have objection for discussion. So what's the hearing?
This is because my crack intern, Kate, found that this wasn't in the bill and it needed to be in there.
And for clarification, this is inserting a new subsection on page 5, line 12, except it was provided in AS 37.14.680B5. The board shall act by a vote of a majority of the members of the board. Do you have an objection? Discussion?
No, just let me find out what we're, except AS, about 5B and C. Let me just check over.
Yes, and Representative Gaddis, while that's being looked up.
And I have a question for the sponsor while he's looking that up is, why did you choose 6 members versus 7?
Because the Fish and Game Commissioner designee is the 7th one.
Got it. Thanks.
So that was Representative Heron explaining that there would be 7 members on the board because the Commissioner of Fish and Game it would be the 7th member. And Representative Heron, do you or your staff have the provision there, 3714B5, to explain why it's accepted as provided?
Or
Representative Johnson, do you want to answer that for the committee?
Except with awarded of grants, must be the vote of 6 public members, which I guess my understanding is it must be a unanimous vote before any grants are awarded. So one dissenting vote could keep a grant.
Right. So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heron.
The rest of their business should be just under normal parliamentary procedure.
Right. And that's what I was just checking on to see that exception. So I'm fine with it, and I will remove my objection.
Okay, so just so that's clear on the record, the requirement of granting grants requires 6 votes, and this does not change that. This just means for the rest of their normal business, a majority of members conducts that. And so the Representative Johnson.
I'm sorry, you finished. I just want to have you finish.
Okay, so Representative Johnson had removed his objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number 2 has been adopted. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I am wondering if this is a board that under statute is allowed to vote telephonically, or if they have to be in person.
And Representative Johnson, if we can, let us have the sponsor come back to us with that question.
And that's the reason. If you're going to have 6 members, I could see a problem with an illness or someone not being there, that no work would get done if somebody just decided not to show up. So maybe that provision should be put in there, or maybe lower that threshold to 5 so that business could be conducted. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I think that that's a very good suggestion, Tyler. And then also for the consideration of the sponsor, we did talk about on page 1, line 11, and the interest. It's not addressed in either one of these 2 amendments that we had. So if the sponsor would look at that and come back to us on that. Is there anything else that the committee would like the sponsor to investigate? We have them looking at the nomination process for board members. We have them looking at this interest. We have
makeup. User group makeup.
Yeah, user group makeup of the board. And so I think there's several questions to answer, and we'll look forward to those and schedule us when the sponsor tells us he has the answer to those questions. There's not an intent to hold this bill up, but we want it right before we leave the Fisheries Committee. Is there anything else on House Bill 49? Seeing none, we will put House Bill 49 aside. And we have House Bill 110. House Bill 110 is before us. We do have, it was mentioned last meeting, on some studies about Chinook, by the study was Terry Vendock, hook mortality of Chinook salmon released in the Kenai River, Alaska. So all members should have that at basically it averaged 7.6% from 1989 to 1991. Thank you for the Fishing Game for providing us with that study. We are now, does the committee have any questions or we'll go to public testimony? And before we do go to public testimony again, I wanted to make it clear that there has been some confusion. The intent of this bill is not to create more catch and release fisheries. The intent of this bill is, if there is a catch and release fishery, lowering the mortality on the fish that are released. So there's nothing in the bill, at least by the bill sponsor, if there's something in there that somehow indicates that we are attempting to create more catch and release fisheries in the state, we'll appreciate that testimony, but that's not. We've received a number of comments that as if that was the interpretation. I just wanted to make it clear that we've been unable to find that in the bill, and it's not the intention of the sponsor, myself, to do that. So wanted to make sure everybody is aware that we would encourage anyone that has that concern, if they can identify something we need to change in there to elucidate that, we would do it. So let's go first to off-net. We have for the committee's information, we have Captain Malden Brook, and I'm not sure the way it's printed out, it may be Captain Brooke Walden, the Alaska Troopers, which is online for questions, and we have Tom Brookover from the Department of Fish and Game that is online for questions as well. Or we have Fish and Game, I guess he is not online now for questions. We have Fish and Game in the audience that will come forward for questions, or they may want to testify on the bill as well. Let's go to the MATSU. Steve Runyon. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, good morning again. Would you identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony on House Bill 110?
Thank you, Chairman Seaton and members of the Fisheries Committee. My name is Steve Runyon. I am representing myself again on this, though I will reference some of the comments we've made in Advisory Committee as former chair of the Susitna Valley Advisory Committee and current vice chair. First off, I could argue the merits or fallacies of requiring barbless hooks, but I feel that this bill should not even be one that is in the legislature. This issue should stay with the Board of Fish. It has been discussed in several different Board of Fish meetings that I have been in attendance. It is far better to leave it in the realm of the Board to decide upon on a case-to-case basis, rather than encapsulating this regulation and statute to apply broadly statewide. I believe this bill would be most appropriately sent to the Board of Fish as a statewide proposal under the Board of Fish procedures, where the public could comment, all available science can be reviewed, versus only science or studies that are favorable to the bill, and it can be adopted or rejected as a regulation as the Board sees fit. Now, if you do decide to continue discussion of this bill, I will bring a few points to light. The Department of Fish and Game has testified on at least one occasion that the gains in release mortality by going from stepping down further from a single hook to a single barbless hook would be nebulous at best. There are studies that show absolutely no difference between hook and release with barbless versus barbed. There are some studies, as this one referenced, which show a very small incremental difference statistically. Like with flies, it shows about a 1% change, maybe 1.5% change between going barbless flies versus just single hook flies. The biggest change in mortality is traditionally been shown to be from going from treble hook or multiple treble hooks down to a single single hook. And that has been shown in various studies that there is a large gain in mortality in taking that step. And that is a step that the Department of Fish and Game has already done in many occasions. It is in their tool bag of step-down measures to reduce fish mortality. I believe that, and we have discussed this in our committee as well, that making a barbless restriction places an undue burden upon the general public, and having it as such a large blanket restriction as this, that anglers fishing to provide food for their families using sports methods are put at a severe handicap in a lot of cases where, as you heard in earlier testimony and from Representative Gaddis, that it's not only the Chinook fisheries, but coho fisheries, sockeye fisheries. We have a lot of struggling fisheries, not only in the valley here, but throughout the state. And in times of low abundance of one species, if there's another species present that is higher in higher abundance, reducing a person's effectiveness in being able to catch that species can create quite a hardship for them. So I'm totally opposed to this bill, number one, as a bill, and also when it does come up before the Board of Fish, I'm opposed to it as a proposal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. And if you have some of those other studies, we would appreciate you forwarding them to us. We are not just selecting studies that support a position in this bill. We want to have all the studies available that we can. We've contacted the Department of Fish and Game in Washington and Oregon, both on their studies. And so we'd appreciate it if you wouldn't mind forwarding those studies or the references to those studies, and we will put them with this bill as well. So thank you. Are there further questions for Mr. Runyon? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. David Martin, are you online still?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony?
Yeah, my name is David Martin from Clam Gulf. I'll be representing myself. A little history. I'm also the chair of the Central Peninsula Advisory Committee, and I've been on various fishing groups and Cook County Aquaculture Association for the last 30-plus years. I support House Bill 110 because it brings to light an issue, a concern. We've seen over the last 3 years, we've seen it, the fisheries go from a few people to a lot of people. You got a few people catch and release them. It doesn't hurt too much, but when you got a lot of people, unfortunately, you need to have restrictions. And I don't want to repeat the history. Hopefully, we can learn from the Northwest and other places. From my understanding, Oregon, Washington has had barbless hooks in the saltwater for quite a few years, and then they're going to implement it into the freshwater system there too. It's also my understanding that the Yukon has a barbless hooks. We dealt with this issue on the Refuge Advisory Committee on the rainbow trout situation in the upper Kenai River between Skelak and Kenai Lake, and there was reports there, you know, a lot of fish, their eyes are plucked out because they're hooked multiple times. And then the disadvantage or the burden to going to barbless hooks, and it's a simple pair of pliers and can crimp it, so you can basically use the same hook. But my big concern is that we shouldn't be playing with our food source for recreational purposes, and if we do have catch and release fisheries, that we should provide an opportunity to have the fisheries. But you go catch and release it when you're in a low abundance situation, and therefore we should give every opportunity and take every precaution to improve the release fish's survival. There's some studies of coho up to 70% hook and release mortalities
will help achieve this goal when we have the objective. The only other avenue in some places might be considered where you do have a lot of people participating in the hook and release fishery, that if the mortality is going to be detrimental, you just go to catch and keep. It's better to keep one or two fish than the hook and release 20-30 and have a mortality in there. So unfortunately, with all the participation in the fisheries today, we're going to have these restrictions put into place. So I applaud you for putting 110 forward. Thank you very much.
Are there questions for Mr. Martin? Seeing none, let's go to Homer Lynn Whitmore. Are you still online, Mr. Whitmore?
I'm still here. Thank you. I'm Lynn Whitmore. I represent myself. And I appreciate Dave Martin's comments regarding the legislature getting involved in the regulation process. However, the time for barbless hooks, I feel, is here now. And one thing I haven't heard anybody testify regarding the cumulative effects of repeated hook and release with barbed hooks. If you fished up a Kenai River, everybody sitting here that's done that will know what I'm talking about. They're scarred up enough and beat up enough to where I don't go up there anymore because it doesn't feel right. And a lot of that is from the cumulative effects. Hook placement, when you look at all the studies that you're going to get to review, you're going to find out that hook placement is way more an important factor than barbless or non-barb. I think I have a big question for enforcement. I'm curious to see where they would stand on this. I fish small flies and on some fisheries, and it's very difficult to find barbless, manufactured barbless fly hooks the size that I like, and I would like to hear what enforcement has to say about at what point is a barb pinched down. And I think you're going to have I feel like you're going to have a hard time getting the corner on that particular issue. It'll be an enforcement question, but I support and applaud your efforts to try to get to some of these fisheries in a barbless fashion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and we will, I think we have someone from Protection Online we'll go to at the end of public testimony and ask them those questions. So are there any questions for Mr. Whitmore? Seeing none, hello, Steve Wally. Are you there from Anchor Point?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can. Would you go ahead with your testimony and introduce yourself for the record?
My name is Errol C. Wally. I'm representing myself on this. I highly support the what 110 is trying to accomplish here. I was born on the Lower Peninsula. I fished the Lower Peninsula River streams for 50-plus years. Watched this fishery go from lots of fish down to very few fish. And the hook and release, anything that'll help the fish, and I think the barbless hook will. I do have a question on, Lynn brought up on, when you squeeze the barb, a lot of times you can't find barbless hooks, and when you squeeze the barb, does that constitute a barbless hook? That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Wally? And we will be asking that question. Just so everyone is familiar, part of the push for this bill came from fly fishermen who thought that everybody should do what they always do, and that's pinch their barbed hooks so that they act as barbless hooks. And so we will go to, let's see, I guess we are now to Captain Waldron. Are you online? Alaska State Troopers? Wildlife Troopers?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. You're free to address other things, but I would like you to address the one question that was asked, and that was on manufactured barbless hook or barbs that are pinched down so that they act as barbless hooks. Is that a problem for you in enforcement, or does the bill need to be changed to specifically identify that barbs are pinched down to the shank so that it is acting as a barbless hook?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. One of the enforcement issues with the statute as proposed is that there is no definition of barbed or barbless hook. Whether the barb is pinched down, what is enough to be pinched down, those things aren't addressed in the proposed statute, and they are not already in regulation, so there would be no definition that would pose an enforcement concern, an issue for us.
Thank you for that. This is why we're having hearings on bills, to figure out what we need to change to make them workable and enforceable. So, as a sponsor of the bill, I'd like you to contact my office later, because our intention is to have this as an enforceable and not have something that's very subjective. So, let's see. Do you wish to address any other points in the bill right now, or does anyone in the on the committee have a specific question for the wildlife troopers? Representative Gaddis.
Yes. At our last meeting, we talked about this. It has a zero fiscal note at this time, and I think from an enforcement standpoint, my question is, if we put this barbless hook bill through, will it necessitate more wildlife troopers to get out and enforce this?
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis. At this time, we have the fiscal note indeterminate for the Department of Public Safety until some of these other issues that have already been brought to attention, maybe some others that I'll bring to Representative Seaton's office attention later when he make that call. So it's hard for us to determine at this time whether it would be a fiscal note and how much that would be, if there is one, until we get some of these other things ironed out on the bill.
Okay, thank you. I just kind of wanted to go on record that there's that possibility. Thank you.
Sure, I appreciate that. And are there other issues that you would like to bring up to the committee at this time?
Mr. Chair, the barbless hook issue that we already discussed, as mentioned once before, pardon the pun here, but that's just the tip of the point here of some other issues that we have in terms of definitions altogether. Most of the sport fishing statewide definitions are found under 5AEC, with a few of them found in 1605, and so they don't necessarily directly apply to 1610. So something as simple as a definition of fresh waters may become an issue for us, and possibly others in the bill. And the other thing that doesn't apply in 1610 for us that I would like to comment on is any strict liability provisions or penalty provisions. So what that would result in is if, as the bill is written now, any citations that are issued would result in misdemeanor charges and eventual misdemeanor convictions on the violators, because there's no strict liability provision. We wouldn't have the ability to make this considered a minor offense by the courts. It would be a misdemeanor conviction, just the way it stands right now. That's another concern we have.
Yeah, thank you for that. That would be a concern for me too if that went forward as a misdemeanor. So that's why we're having hearings on the bills, and we appreciate that, and we'll appreciate your contact on that as far as normal fish and game violations and use of illegal gear. Let's see, were there any other things that you wanted to raise for us at this point, Mr. Walden?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I've got the bulk of it covered this time, at least, where the bill stands now, anyway.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your Jerry knows concerns with us, and I see the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in the room. Is there anything that the department, Sport Fish, would like to testify on or raise to the committee at this time? If there are, you're free to come forward. If not, you can. You're here for questions. Does anyone have any questions for Department of Fish and Game? Yes. Representative Christ Tompkins. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Charlie Swanton. I'm the director for the Division of Sport Fish.
Welcome. And Representative Christ Tompkins.
What kind of discussion does the department have right now to if it were required for management to restrict barbed hooks?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Christ Tompkins, we have a fair amount of discretion as it relates to this particular bill, specifically with regards to moving into the arena of protection of salmon stocks for the purposes of meeting our escapement goals. We believe that under our current emergency order authority that offers guidance on implementation of changes to bag possession annual limits with altering methods and means, that if we deemed it appropriate and offered a sufficient definition for a barbless hook, that we could at present implement what this bill is seeking to accomplish through our emergency order authority, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Follow-up? I guess I'd just like to say that, you know, a broad authority doesn't put the public on any kind of a notice that something might need to be done. And so as an EO in the middle of the season coming forward and saying, you've got to change your gear, is less than optimal as far as my concern goes. My concern also goes to the fact that if you have a fishery that is designated as catch and release because of low abundance, higher mortality is exactly the opposite of what you want to have happen for that fishery. So if you have a king salmon stock that is going into the Mat-Su that has enough for, that is going to be over its base but isn't going to provide a large yield, you could have a catch and release fishery and withstand a certain amount of mortality. But the higher that mortality is, it's going to restrict the ability of the department to have that recreational opportunity. And so the purpose of this bill is to keep the mortality rates in catch and release fisheries, which are going to happen generally at low abundance, to the lowest level possible to allow that fishery recreational opportunity to occur. So I guess part of the question is, do you disagree with the previous Fish and Game studies that have shown that barbless hooks reduce mortality in catch and release fisheries? Or does the department still stand by those previous studies?
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, the department has not conducted studies specifically to the efficacy or the benefits of a barbless versus a barbed hook. Most of the work that we have done that was cited earlier, and then some additional work that has been done, was with regards to trying to quantify actually catch and release mortality. As you referenced, one of those studies was done on king salmon. That is probably our seminal piece of work with regards to king salmon that is cited in terms of catch and release mortality on king salmon. The other two studies were done on coho salmon. in intertidal areas where we know that those fish, specifically coho salmon, are very, because of stresses related to change in their physiology from being a saltwater organism to being a freshwater organism, that they are prone to high stress. The one thing I would add is that if in fact we were faced with what one could consider single digits of benefit from a barbless to a barbed hook, or going in that order, we probably, in the situations that we're in with regards to these things, we probably would, much to my chagrin, or much to my, you know, I guess, we would probably just close those fisheries rather than trying to assimilate a 3 or 4 or 5% savings in terms of mortality from a barbed to a barbless hook, Mr. Chairman.
Interesting perspective on when you are in low abundance and having mortality rates and considerations on loss of opportunity. Further questions for the department? Seeing none, thank you for coming forward and testifying. And as the public sees the bill and as there are further considerations, appreciate them sending those in so that we can again incorporate things into bills to make sure that we get them in the best avenue we can. Anything further to come, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I always like gear type discussions, and this is what I consider a gear type discussion, so I think it's good and healthy that we do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And, you know, I am just, you know, as a sponsor of the bill, want to address the idea of trying to legislate fish and game matters. You know, that's very problematic. We try and keep those allocation issues and others out. However, we, as the legislature, have established size limits on vessels. We've outlawed fish traps. So we do a number of things that are a statewide parameter, and if mortality is a consideration for us, whether it's on trophy rainbow trout or trophy fish in a river, if we are talking about the opportunity or loss of opportunity for recreational fishing on some of the stocks at low abundance, it seems appropriate to have us consider that, because this is the venue where we as legislators can bring forward those things. I would appreciate it if the members of the public and the advisory committees would look at the data and take those to the Board of Fish. That's not the venue that we have open to us, and so that's why the bill's here. So with that, it is 11:40, and we will be adjourned for the day.